Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorised reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
Shares for Beginners. Weekend Watch List.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners Weekend Watch List, where we take a close look at an individual company that you may wish to consider for your watch list. It's not a recommendation to buy, but a way for you to learn how Stockopedia screens for value. Joining me today is Elio D'Amato, and we're talking Doug Technology, ASX code DUG. G'day, Elio.
Yeah, g'day, Phil. Thanks very much for having me on, and I'm sure a number of listeners out there would be thinking about Doug Technology. They'll possibly even look up its share price and go, geez, why on earth is he talking about a stock, you know, that's only been listed a few years and is trading at all-time highs? It's not really the MO of a value investor, as it were. But I think there's some interesting themes here that have been playing out for quite some time, even a lot longer than most of us realize. And I think that broad discussion will be really interesting. And more importantly, how we did identify value back in the day and how our members have benefited.
And of course, it's that AI story, which seems to be the buzzword at the moment. And as we just said, I fear you prefer to use actual intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. No, AI is a new acronym that's been inserted into everyone's dictionary. Artificial intelligence is the buzzword. And much of that, of course, Phil, is driven by the meteoric rise of NVIDIA in the US and how it's turned that acronym from FANGs to now be the Magnificent Seven. But I'm not going to go into, you know, Charles Bronson or the various other actors that were in the original film. For those that haven't watched it yet, I thoroughly encourage you to do that. But I did write a piece in the Australian Financial Review about this topic and how AI has been a part of our lives for a lot longer than NVIDIA's been around. In a sense, if you've gone to the shops, if you've virtually ordered anything online, you've searched the internet, you've done all those things, all of that is powered by artificial intelligence. And there's a whole stream of mathematics from traffic lights through to a range of construction materials, all these built through neural networks and the various other sorts of artificial intelligence that's out there that have ultimately delivered what we have. Yes, we know it as ChatGPT in many cases. Lecturers will decry its existence, but then again, they did so with Wikipedia as well, and they're still around. So, I mean, at the end of the day, obviously, it is an interesting theme, and I think I want to talk about it because if we think that there are specific companies that will benefit, we are kidding ourselves. And I think you even intimated to me, Phil, in our little chat beforehand, most businesses nowadays incorporate AI or artificial intelligence within their business some way because, of course, margins are the great profit expander and any way to save on costs, which is what AI does for many companies, is seen as a big positive and therefore inputted into their process in one way or the other. But for today, yes, Doug is our focus. And it's a great business, you know, into that high performance computing and the like, and obviously is very much related to the emergence of AI as a thematic in a broader sense.
And so we're looking at this as a lesson for looking at stocks at the right time. So we'll get around to that. But tell us the Doug story. And it's about supercomputing hardware, isn't it? Providing the wherewithal for companies, and I believe in the resources sector mainly, to crunch their numbers.
Yeah, the oil and gas sector is the major focus for the business. It's where the majority of their revenues come. I think some 80% or so come from that. But they do have an emerging services as well as software part of the business. And as most of these companies are trying to do, they're growing their software as a service division where they can obviously charge recurring revenue. And let's face it, I mean, we're talking about a Perth business here. Many people may not have heard of it, even if you know their share price direction, but they're established in Perth, but they've got offices in London, Houston, Kuala Lumpur, and I think they even recently opened in Abu Dhabi. So again, you know, a lot of our great Aussie stories don't necessarily stay in Australia in order to become that story that we all admire and love. And the other thing is, not only do they have a wide selection of computers that they can call on to do the high performance calculations that many of the oil and gas sector obviously need when they're doing their seismic testing, but then there's also a whole range of other services that they can provide, but it's green. So that's why governments really like them, because the energy that they utilize is, to their degree, as green as can possibly be. Because, of course, let's face it, you need power to make these things run. Computers don't just run on hamsters turning their legs, as even though some people may think they do. Therefore, because of that, it is important their carbon footprint and what they leave. And the company does say quite often that it actually is all about reducing its carbon footprint. But look, I've talked about that oil and gas sector, and it's where traditionally the business has been positioned. I mean, we're talking very large and complex data sets in order to conduct the seismic testing that is, or seismic surveys, sorry, I should say, that are related to the areas. So this is by no means a small feat. But the thing that brought it onto our radar was that the company emerged from a, you know, cash-burning, loss-making enterprise and then became a profitable enterprise. And one of the edges that we get as DIY investors is we don't have to wait before the big guys bestow upon us their view on the world and what stocks are good or bad, but we can be nimble enough to identify these emerging growth stories that are going up and are expected to grow revenues, as is the case with Doug, where revenues, cash flow, profit are all increasing, all expected to increase, particularly given that they've actually come out and they've got some new compute. Basically, they've increased capacity, virtually doubled the size of it, and I virtually no doubt that that'll be filled up pretty quickly by their range of clients. So I even saw there was a recent announcement. I think there was a pretty photo from Houston, which basically was just a room with orange boxes. I mean, it doesn't look like much to the unwashed, but in the computing world, it is a big deal and a big sense. And Doug is going to be at the forefront of that. So processes that took weeks and months, now reduced to within a week, probably will get quicker, as is the great mantra. You know, we have to do things quicker, things have to be smaller, and Doug is going to be at the forefront of that. So this is a long-term thematic story because its fundamental performance has now supported the actual story, as it were. The question mark, of course, as always, is at what price, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But yes, I think in very simple terms for everyone, my short answer to my long response thus far is they do computer stuff, and they do a hell of a lot of it, and they do it really quickly, which is basically what investors want to know when you're talking AI.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to warn listeners about. If you go to the website, I quickly got lost in all the jargon and the maths, and it's good that we've got super nerds running some supercomputers that can provide these services to companies that actually need to drive this, and you've explained that very well. It's a small cap company, isn't it? It's very tiny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only small. I think it's only 200 million market cap, and that's after the share price. 300,
somewhere around the 300, I think.
Oh, 300, is it? Yeah. So nonetheless, it flies under the radar for many businesses, but it is quite profitable. I mean, the services part of their business, which does encapsulate a lot of that oil and gas sector, had a hell of a lot of wins in the last half year, something of around $40 million US, and that was up significantly on their prior corresponding period. Revenue also rose quite strongly. Revenue grew to $30 million, and their cash flow position, or their net cash flow position, is positive, which is great given that they have to invest so much into these machines. And the company does flag this, that it has to invest so much into these machines in order to remain ahead of the game. I mean, we are really talking cutting edge stuff. I mean, by the time it gets onto your fancy iPhone or whatever Samsung device you use, it's probably been through machines upon machines of work 100 times over. So they've basically got to be more advanced than that even before they're thought of. So that continuous investment is something that the company needs to do. But the good thing is that their level of cash flow is now positive. They're generating that, they're earning that, they're banking that. And that obviously is reflected up the chain when you look at their sales growing, profit growing, and all those things as well. So I caution investors to not necessarily just look at the size of a business when thinking about opportunity, because often when you're top of the tree, it gets a little harder to grow a little bit more, whereas sometimes you can find some really good sweet fish, as has been the case with Doug, which are in growing industries, growing sectors, and the demand for their services are also likely to increase. The problem is, I suppose, you can see the price has already reflected that, so I'm not preaching to the unconverted. A lot of people know that, but even then, achieve what they're destined to achieve, chances are they'll probably keep running some more.
Is it rare to come across a company like this that it's so AI-facing in Australia?
Yeah, look, this is interesting. I mentioned that AFR article that I'm writing recently, and obviously the majority of beneficiaries in the whole world of AI are the semiconductors or the microchip businesses. And just like the microchips that are being built here in Australia, they're tiny as well. In fact, you can't hardly see them. There's really not many players, probably because we haven't got one of those multi-billion dollar foundries here in this country. So there's the likes of Weebit Nano, Blue Chip, and a few others that are doing their thing on the side, obviously trying to make it work, but they're still high-risk enterprises. But they are destined to be the major beneficiaries of this whole AI revolution. And then, of course, your eye then gets cast to some of those IT providers, service providers. And I've talked about ATA in the past as an emerging mini story, but obviously Technology One's the elephant in the room. There's Data 3, Dicker Data. They basically outsource their services to build the AI piece. And in regards to Doug, it's similar, where they outsource effectively their processing power, their global processing power, in order to enact and do the things that the computer nerds, as it were, want to do. And I just want to echo your sentiment. It is very heavy, as it were, in tech jargon when you look over the company's website and read their information. Another similar business many people may know is Megaport, MP1. They basically do, again, the back of the envelope version, there's a whole range of internet connections which allow them to connect to different servers located all around the world, and they basically do the technology that makes that pretty seamless. And look, they're good at it, but read their website and it's easy to make your head spin. And Doug can be the same if you start to think of that. But if you really break it down really easy, that the more you want to do, or the more you want a computer to do for you, the more processing power you need. That's why, you know, these high performance computing systems like Doug have are so important. And it's why Their founders are doctors in data science. So it's not like it's a mug punter like me jumping on board trying to sell the stock. This is obviously very much focused on that technology endpoint and delivering that. And if investors can sort of ignore, I suppose, or maybe squint when looking at the numbers, it can look better. But the good news is they are actually delivering. And I think investors have already woken up some of that, but you know, there's always the opportunity to get in before the big end of town get in, because of course they've just been added to the All Ordinaries just recently, so there are going to start getting more eyeballs looking at the business not too far down the track. They're out there, just got to find them, and you got to have the means of doing so.
Are you picking shares on gut instinct, buying on press tips or rumors? Do you struggle to find the time to keep up with the research and analysis that goes into evaluating potential stocks? Stockopedia are pleased to offer a special deal to listeners of this podcast, a 14-day free trial and a 10% discount on the first year of membership. Sign up now at y.stockopedia.com/sfb. There's no better time to access the most comprehensive, easy-to-use investing toolbox for DIY share investors. 10% off, 14-day free trial, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's why. www.stockopedia.com/sfb. And in terms of its share price, you are thinking that its run may be over. Why is that?
Yeah, look, that's interesting. The value metric in Stockopedia is 17, and that is traditionally a pretty bad score. Now, I'm going to put my hand up here and say I can remember covering Pro Medicus when it was not that far off $3. Today, it's close to $100 if it hasn't already crossed that. And it was overvalued back then at $3. So, you know, how could it go even more? And I think it's important to remember that a valuation that an analyst puts on a business is not necessarily tied to what the business. I mean, there is a bit of crystal balling because we have to discount the future or the value of the future cash flows to a present value, and we have to sort of work our way around that. That is obviously an element of crystal balling, but we don't know what we don't know. And as the company grows, it develops, adds new products like a WiseTech, for example, and gets, you know, deeper into the industry and starts to make its way through there, those once upon a time, which were Daryl Kerrigan type of tell him he's dreaming valuations, they start to become a lot more of a reality. So at the moment, Doug, you're right, Phil, they're not cheap. You got to pay to play if you want a piece of Doug. And that valuation metric of 17 suggests that. In fact, when Chris actually spoke about the business, he did so back in September last year. And I know most people can't even remember yesterday, let alone that far back. But back then, the value rank was 45. So again, it wasn't in the upper echelon. It wasn't dirt cheap like some of the coal miners or those businesses with ultra low PEs, as it were. But relative to its industry, it was actually looking quite okay. It was pretty moderate. You weren't paying too high above the odds. I think its PE was 17. Even at the time, it had an EV to EBITDA of 9, a dividend yield that doesn't pay one because it has to reinvest the profits, of course. So there was, one would argue, some value there. But of course, that was back when it was $1.90. Now that it's above $3, people are obviously reassessing their understanding in regards to what that value gap actually is. And we got some confidence from the half year that everything's steady as she goes and that they are still growing quite aggressively. But of course, you got to have to pay to play if you want a piece of that. And really, that price, having done what it's done, has dragged down some of those other metrics where we have seen a slight pullback. Although I see momentum is still relatively strong in regards to price, although some analysts have started to moderate some of their earnings expectations, which has also dragged that down a bit. So overall, folks, the stock rank at the moment is 59. And I suppose some may be wondering why on earth, because I'm bringing it up because, of course, when we showed it to our members, it was back at 85. So, and these are the sorts of overall things you need to consider when investing. It's never follow a tip sheet, buy, sell, do that, because, you know, quite frankly, just give me your money because it'll be better in my hands than you losing it and giving it to someone on the market. Whereas this is really involved in understanding the business, understanding its drivers, and then making a decision based on that. You ask me about Doug, it's a very different decision today than it would have been when it was raised in September or even a year ago, back at this same time where the price was even lower. I think it was back below a dollar back then. But again, even at that stage, it's a different decision. There's always moments in time and we just got to accept and make our decisions based on that.
You also mentioned that it might be a good time for taking profits in our preliminary chat. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a very strong rise in 12 months. I mean, it's gone from 90 cents to $2.80. And therefore, you know, we all wish our stocks did that. We all wish it was that easy over the year. But of course, we know it's not. And we know markets zig and zag. I think that's an official term. You can look that up in Investopedia, Phil. At the moment, this has been zigging. We know that. Eventually, it has to. Just gravity will have to work. There'll have to be a pullback. There'll be traders making money. They'll sell. There's a whole myriad of reasons. Not for me to decry why they're doing it. They just might.
There's tidal forces, isn't there, that are pulling and pushing many, many ways at any particular time.
Exactly. If listeners think the price moved between over-enthusiasm and over-pessimism and the reality somewhere in between, that's probably the best way to think about it when you're talking about an open market where you can trade shares so easily. So given the fact that it's risen so much in 12 months and it is extraordinary, I think you'd be nuts not to take some profits. One of the things that I often like to think about, you know, when people look at a share price graph, they see a stock that was, say, 10 cents, and they think, oh, well, if I held it from 10 cents to $10, I'd be a multimillionaire. But you know what it's like, Phil. You hold it at 10 cents, then you get sweaty palms at 20 cents. It gets to 25 cents, and you start getting a bit restless in bed. It gets to 30 cents, and you start openly sweating. Beads appear on your forehead. You don't know what to do until it gets to 35, and guess what you do? Sell. So unless you're one of the founders of the business, which are being gifted shares in a lot of instances, or at least putting their coin into something that they control, then chances are who held the stock at the early stages of its evolution don't hold the exact same amount of stock in the latter part of its evolution. There has been trading along the way. That's one of the great gifts we have as direct retail investors. That's what makes the difference between stock pickers and money managers. Any mug can be a stock picker, right? There's a 50% chance you'll be right or 50% chance you'll be wrong. And then you can just add a narrative to it. But then being a money manager is another level altogether, where then all of a sudden you need to consider things like your exposure. Is it too much? Are you too heavily at risk? And as you said, you know, being over a market cap of 300 million, it is a relatively small business. So the theory is that it's not that hard for this to have a pretty big correction. And then you need to decide whether you have the time, patience, or gumption to be able to cop that into your portfolio. You may not. And if you don't, then you have to act. But in this instance here, if you believe in that long-term thematic of AI, then you know that this stuff has to be computed and processed somewhere. And unless companies want to invest the heavy investment in building it out themselves, they're going to need services like Doug. So if there's someone out there that can tell me we're going to need AI or computers less in the future than what we use them today, good luck. Please shoot me an email. Otherwise, you just got to accept that, you know, businesses like this are the new norm. They're going to become the new industrials, as it were, and hence why we're talking about it today.
It just seems to me that this company may be a minnow swimming in a large ocean full of whales like Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Azure. Is that a risk for them?
Yeah, it is to a degree. I mean, obviously, you can't be yesterday's hero when it comes to IT in the future. You always have to be forward-looking. So one of the risks is that, well, there's two key risks. One is, you know, they just don't have the funds to continually invest to a level that ultimately drives what needs to be done. And the second is, yes, that they get gobbled up by a major player that sits there and says, no, we can do it bigger, better, and faster, and decides to do it themselves. In our view, with regards to Doug, that because they're at the cutting edge, so they're always a step ahead, as it were, of a lot of their providers. And let's face it, Alphabet's or the Googles or Microsoft or Amazon or all that, they're very big beasts. Even though they look like they move at lightning speed, actually in the background, they move quite slowly. So we need to accept that that's one of the drags. One of the benefits of Doug is that they're small and nimble enough to do all the things that need to be done. They continually open up offices all around the world in order to do that, to service a growing client base. If they can keep managing to do that and keep going forward, then I think the bigger risk is that they could be taken out before they reach their full maturity, because they are really good at what they do. And you can see that in the numbers. I mean, we're talking, you know, forward estimates on revenue in 2025 of close to $70 million. I mean, that's extraordinary growth relative to where the business was, say, back in 2023, where it was just a little over 50. So, and they're probably going to shoot the lights out of that as well, if we, you know, going to be truthful and honest. I mean, how do you put a cap on exponential growth? I don't know how you do that. So they're running a bit like a billy cart down the hill at the moment, where, you know, it's sort of rattling away and things are really picking up speed. But this will be in the skill of the management and their operation. If they can keep control of the reins, if they can keep focus on what it is they're really good at, which is that high-powered computing that we talked about, then I dare suggest they will be able to navigate this period of business growth that they've been able to achieve. They'll always be as good as the people they employ. And let's face it, Phil, in this industry, you don't get much change out of $250,000 when it comes to employing a tech nerd. That's just the fact of life, and best we accept that. It is obviously a risk, but I think its constant pursuit of being cutting edge insulates them somewhat from that risk. And if anything, if you want to basically be number one in this space, you might have to buy yourself a company like Doug, because they've got that global reach, which they're obviously building and investing quite heavily into.
And of course, there's the momentum that you mentioned as well. And I just wanted to point out for any chartists out there, it's still above its 50-day moving average and doesn't seem anywhere near touching it at the moment.
No, that's right. I mean, it doesn't really actually take a chartist to look at the graph and see that it's heading northeast at all-time highs. And that's where I like to buy stocks generally. I mean, the fact it's above its 50-day moving average in what we call the shine zone, for example, in the sense that it's above its average true range indicators. I don't know. I think I could throw a hatful of indicators at you, Phil. And I don't think one of them would necessarily suggest a sell on Doug at the moment. Doesn't mean it can't be into the future, of course. Those that look at squiggly lines know that there'll be a moment where they have to possibly lock in profits. Maybe not now because the thing's still going up. But if you are taking that hyper long-term view, then possibly. Much of what we've talked about, I suppose, are the, you know, the nitty-gritty sort of facts of the business, which are of concern to fundamental analysts, particularly those wanting to take long-term positions in the business. You know, when you talk about things like margins, having them above 10% is also quite good that they're able to do that. Their ability to, increase cash, pay down debt, do all those sorts of things. A chartist doesn't care because all that's reflected in the price. But even then, they can't find anything to sell it at the moment, given the trajectory that it's had. And I think investors in it need to appreciate and understand that the more it goes up, the higher the risks do get. But I mean, for Australian pessimistic investors, that probably won't be too hard, right? We always worry when we make money. But then when you look at something like NVIDIA, when it's so game-changing that you sit there, there can be real seismic shifts in appetite for the services that are being provided. And we see that with Doug. And just to reinforce, we aren't the only ones that have seen it, given its share price has gone up over 200% over the last 12 months. So as you can see in this modern age, as we learned in the COVID recovery, it doesn't take long for things to bounce and bounce hard. So the demand for things can get up high really, really quickly, as we've seen with ChatGPT and its application and a whole range of other AI pieces. Not to mention that I still have my good old trusty Flybuys card, Phil. Still, when I go to Coles, I give that a good old swipe. I don't know where that goes, but I know they collect a lot of data on me. And no doubt some of that information in some shape or form, even though I'm not an oil or gas explorer, some of that will probably make its way to a Doug computer in the not too distant future.
And of course, the only thing left is to warn listeners, if they go to their Twitter or X feed, that it's full of bad and incomprehensible maths jokes. those nerds love their math jokes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to actually give them a good follow then, Phil. I could do with a bit of a chuckle. And this is a real, you know, standout in a sector which has had some pain. I mean, you know, there's nothing worse than when you get something like a Wizard of Oz scenario where you look behind the curtain and there's a little person driving things. And we saw that with Appen, which apparently was one of the forefront leaders of AI here in this country. But then we scratched below the surface and we realized it wasn't really AI. And then all of a sudden, even their big customers have disappeared and they've suffered as an overall business as a result of that. And I don't think you have to look too far at the share price in order to see that. So, yeah, no, Doug's a very different business, real world. And yes, if you have a quirky sense of humor that and an element of intelligence that gets this stuff, please, by all means, follow their feeds because, there will no doubt be some funny math jokes for those that are that way inclined.
Elio D'Amato, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.